Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Family Jensen 4. Hard Ride to Hell by William W. Johnstone and J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Mort Sheldon. With performances by Thomas Penny, James Lewis, Mort Sheldon, Richard Cutting, David Harris, Nora Ashrati, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Sheeran, Mark Halpern, David Jordan, Barbara Pinolini, Stephen Carpenter, Elizabeth Jernigan, Tim Carlin, Tim Getman, Joe Brack, David Coyne, Alexander Strain, Michael Glenn, Matthew McGee, Nick DePinto, Eric Mesner, Scott McCormick, Patrick Bussing, James Konachek, Tim Pabone, Richard Rowan, Ken Jackson, and Christopher Graybill. The two men stood facing each other. One was red, the other white, but both were tall and lean. And the stiff, wary stance in which they held themselves belied their advanced years. Both wore buckskins as well, and their faces were lined and leathery from long decades spent out in the weather. Silver and white streaked their hair. The white man had a gun belt strapped around his waist, with a holstered Colt revolver riding on each hip. His thumbs were hooked in the belt close to each holster. You could tell by looking at him that he was ready to hook and draw. He wasn't the only one with a menacing attitude. The Indian had his hand near the tomahawk that was thrust behind the sash at his waist. To anyone watching, it would appear that both of these men were ready to try to kill each other.
Two bears, you old red heathen!
Preacher, you pale-faced scoundrel.
The two men clasped each other in a rough embrace and slapped each other on the back. The large group of warriors standing nearby visibly relaxed at this display of affection between the two men. For the most part, the Assiniboine had been friendly with white men for many, many years. But even so, it wasn't that common for a white man to come riding boldly into their village, as the one called Preacher had done. Some of the men smiled now because they had known all along what was coming. The legendary mountain man Preacher, who was famous, or in some cases infamous, from one end of the frontier to the other, had been friends with their chief Two Bears for more than three decades. Preacher didn't have any goal in visiting the Assiniboine village other than visiting an old friend. He'd been drifting around the frontier for more than 50 years now, most of the time without any plan other than seeing what was on the far side of the hill. Preacher stepped back and rested his hands on Two Bears' shoulders.
I hear that Raven's wing has passed.
Yes, last winter. It was her time. She left this world peacefully, with a smile on her face.
That's good to hear. I never knew a finer lady.
I miss her. Every time the sun rises or sets, every time the wind blows, every time I hear a wolf howl or see a bird soaring through the sky, I long to be with her again. But when the day is done and we are to be together again, we will be. This I know in my heart. Until then, I can still see her in the fine, strong son she bore me and the daughters who have given me grandchildren.
Two Bears nodded toward a young woman standing nearby who stood with an infant in her arms.
You remember my youngest daughter, Wildflower?
I do, although the last time I saw her, I reckon she wasn't much bigger than that sprout with her.
My grandson, Little Hawk.
Preacher took off his battered, floppy-brimmed felt hat and nodded politely to the woman.
Wildflower, it is good to see you again. And howdy to you too, Little Hawk.
The baby didn't respond to Preacher, of course, but he did watch the mountain man with huge dark eyes.
He has not seen that many white men in his life. You look strange, even to one so young.
Oh, if it wasn't for this beard of mine, I'd look just about as much like an Injun as any of you do.
Two Bears half turned and motioned to one of the lodges.
Come, we will go to my lodge and smoke a pipe and talk. I would know what brings you to our village, Preacher.
Horse, the same as usual.
Preacher jerked a thumb over his shoulder toward the big gray stallion that stood with his reins dangling. A large wolf-like cur sat on his haunches next to the stallion.
How many horses called horse and dogs called dog have you had in your life, Preacher?
Well, too many to count, I reckon. But I figure if a name works just fine once, there ain't no reason it won't work again.
How do you keep finding them?
It ain't so much me finding them as it is them finding me. Somehow they just show up. I'd call it fate if I believed in such a thing.
You do not believe in fate?
I believe in hot lead, cold steel, and gun smoke. Anything beyond that's just a guess.
Right now, the only smoke in Two Bears' lodge came from the small fire in the center of it and the pipe that Preacher and the Assiniboine chief shared. The two men were silent, their friendship not needing words all the time. Two women were in the lodge as well, preparing a meal. They were Two Bears' wives, the former wives of his brother he had taken in when the women were widowed, as a good brother was expected to do. The smells coming from the pot they had on the fire were mighty appetizing. That stew was bound to be good. Preacher and Two Bears raised their heads. Neither man seemed alarmed. As seasoned veterans of the frontier, they had too much experience for that. But they also knew that whenever someone was moving fast, there was a chance it was because of trouble.
You want to go see what that's about?
If my people wish to see me, they know where I'm to be found.
Preacher couldn't argue with that, but he was mighty curious to know what was afoot. Then, the buffalo hide flap over the lodge's entrance was thrust aside. A broad-shouldered, powerful-looking warrior strode into the lodge, then stopped short at the sight of a white man sitting there cross-legged beside the fire with the chief.
Two Bears, I must speak with you.
This is Standing Rock. He is married to my daughter, Wildflower.
Well, howdy, Standing Rock.
The warrior just looked annoyed like he wasn't interested in introductions right now.
Two Bears,
is there trouble?
Blue Bull has disappeared.
Blue Bull was one of their own Assiniboine warriors, and he and Standing Rock were good friends.
We were hunting in the hills west of here. Blue Bull chose to follow the tracks of a small antelope herd. I took another path. We were to meet back at the spot where we parted, which Blue Bull failed to do. After waiting longer than he should have needed to return, I went in search of him.
This part of the country was peaceful for the most part. But a man alone who ran into a mountain lion or a bear might be in for trouble. Also, ravines cut across the landscape in places, and if a pony shied at the wrong time, its rider could be tossed off and fall into one of those deep, rugged gullies.
You were unable to find him?
The antelope tracks led to a narrow canyon, and so did Blue Bull's. The ground was rocky, and I lost the trail. I came back to get more men so we can search for him. He may be hurt.
Two Bears nodded.
Yeah. Gather a dozen men. We will ride in search of Blue Bull while there is still light.
I'll come with you.
This is a matter for the Assiniboine.
Preacher is a friend to the Assiniboine, and has been for more years than you have been walking this earth, Standing Rock. I would not ask him to involve himself in our trouble, but if he wishes to, I will not deny him.
Well, I just want to lend a hand if I can.
Standing Rock didn't say anything else. He just stared back coldly at Preacher for a second, then turned and left the lodge to gather the search party as Two Bears had told him to.
The hot blood of young men sometimes overpowers what should be the coolness of their thoughts.
Oh, it's fine with me, old friend. Like I said, I just want help.
As they left the lodge, Preacher pointed to the big cur that had come with him to the village.
Dog, there's about as good a tracker as you're ever gonna find. When we get to the spot where Standing Rock lost the trail, if you got something that belonged to Blue Bull, we can give Dog the scent. He's liable to lead us right to him.
I will speak to Blue Bull's wife and make sure we take something of his with us.
Several of the warriors were getting ready to ride. That didn't take much preparation, considering that all they had to do was throw blankets over their ponies' backs and rig rope halters. Although Preacher had planned to spend a few days in the Assiniboine village, he hadn't unsaddled horse yet, so the stallion was ready to go too. The news of Blue Bull's disappearance had gotten around the village. A lot of people were standing nearby with worried looks on their faces as members of the search party mounted up. Two Bears went over to talk to Blue Bull's wife, who hurried off to the lodge and came back with one of his buckskin shirts. Two Bears swung up onto his pony with the lithe ease of a man considerably younger than he really was. He gave a curt nod, and the search party set out from the village, with the chief, Standing Rock, and Preacher in the lead. Standing Rock pointed out the route for them, and they lost no time in riding into the hills where the two warriors had been hunting. Preacher glanced at the sky and saw that they had about 3 hours of daylight left. He hoped that would be enough time to find Blue Bull. Of course, it was possible that nothing bad had happened to Blue Bull at all. Warrior could have gotten carried away in pursuit of the antelope and just lost track of the time. They might even run into him on his way back to the village. Something was stirring in Preacher's guts, though. Some instinctive warning told him they might not be so lucky. Over the years, Preacher had learned to trust those hunches. Standing Rock pointed out the tracks of the antelope herd when the search party reached them.
You can see the tracks lead higher into the hills. Blue Bull followed them while I went to the north. He wanted to bring one of the antelope back to the village.
Why did you not go with him? Why did you go north?
I know a valley up there where the antelope like to graze. I thought they might circle back to it.
Did you see the antelope?
No. My thought proved to be wrong.
Two Bears' silence in response was as meaningful and damning as anything he could have said. Standing Rock angrily jerked his pony into motion and trotted away, following the same path as the antelope had earlier. Preacher, Two Bears, and the rest of the search party went the same way, at a slower pace.
If anything happened to Blue Bull, Standing Rock will believe that it was his fault for not going with his friend.
He wants to impress you, don't he? Must not be easy being married to the chief's daughter.
He's a good warrior, but he does not always know that.
Eventually, Standing Rock settled down a little and slowed enough for the rest of the search party to catch up with him. The antelope herd had followed a twisting path into the hills, and so had Blue Bull as he trailed them. Preacher had no trouble picking out the unshod hoof prints of the warrior's pony. The slopes became steeper, the landscape more rugged. In the distance, the snow-capped peaks of the Rocky Mountains loomed, starkly beautiful in the light from the setting sun. They were dozens of miles away, even though they looked almost close enough to reach out and touch. Preacher knew that Blue Bull's trail wouldn't lead that far. Tracks brought him to a long, jagged ridge that was split by a canyon cutting through it. Standing Rock reined his pony to a halt and pointed to the opening.
That is where Blue Bull went. The tracks vanished on the rocks inside the canyon.
Did you follow it to the other end?
I did, but the tracks of Blue Bull's pony did not come out.
A man cannot go into a place and not come out of it, one way or another.
Let's have a look. We can give Dog a whiff of Blue Bull's shirt, and he ought to be able to tell us where the fellow went.
The big cur had bounded along happily beside Preacher and Horse during the search. He still had the exuberance of youth, dashing off several times to chase after small animals. They rode on to the canyon entrance, where they stopped to peer at the ground. The surface had already gotten quite rocky, so the tracks weren't as easy to see as they had been. But Preacher noticed something immediately.
Some of those antelope tracks are headed back out of the canyon. Critters went in there, then they turned around and came out. They were in a hurry, too. Something must have spooked them.
There are many antelope in these hills. Perhaps the tracks going the other direction were made at another time.
Preacher swung down from the saddle and knelt to take a closer look at the hoof prints.
Well, they look the same to me. I think they were all made today, coming and going.
What about the tracks of Blue Bull's pony?
Well, he went on into the canyon. I can't see that he came back out. Way it looks to me, Blue Bull followed those antelope here and rode up in time to see him come bolting back out. Well, maybe he's curious, wanted to see what stampeded him like that. So he rode in to find out.
It must have been a bear. Blue Bull would not have been so foolish.
Blue Bull has always been curious. I can imagine him doing as Preacher has said. As you would say, old friend, there is one way to find out.
Yep, let Dog have Blue Bull's scent. There's anybody who can lead us right to him, it's that big shaggy varmint.
Two Bears took out the shirt Blue Bull's wife had given him from the pouch where he had put it and handed it to Preacher.
No, come here, boy.
Preacher knelt beside the big cur and let Dog get a good whiff of the shirt.
Find the fellow who wore this. Come on, find him.
Dog ran into the canyon, paused about 50 yards in to look back at Preacher, and then resumed the hunt.
He's got the scent. All we have to do is follow him.
They rode into the canyon, moving fairly rapidly to keep up with Dog. Now that they were relying on Dog's sense of smell rather than trying to follow tracks, they could set a slightly faster pace. The canyon was about 50 yards wide with rocky walls that were too steep for a horse to climb, although a man might be able to. There were places here and there where the canyon walls had collapsed partially, and horses might be able to pick their way up and down as long as they were careful. Preacher spotted a shiny place on a flat rock. The mark was small, barely noticeable. The most likely explanation for it was that a shod hoof had nicked the rock in the fairly recent past. Blue Bull, like the rest of the Assiniboine, would have been riding an unshod pony when he came through here. So another rider, most likely a white man, had been in the canyon recently. Preacher couldn't be sure it was today, but the evidence pointed in that direction. There might have been even more than one man riding through the canyon. This was Indian land, by tradition, not by treaty. And the ranchers in the area had always respected that because of a long history of peace between the whites and the Assiniboine. They had never stopped white men from crossing their hunting grounds as long as everyone treated each other with respect. It was possible some cattle had strayed up here from one of the ranches and cowboys from that spread had come to look for the missing stock. But that bad feeling still lurked in Preacher's gut. It grew stronger when he saw Dog veer toward a cluster of rocks at the base of one of those caved-in places along the canyon's left-hand wall. The big cur went straight to the rocks and started nosing around, pawing at them.
Your animal has lost the scent. There is nothing there.
Well, we better take a closer look.
Preacher glanced over at Two Bears, who nodded. The chief's face was set in grim lines. And Preacher knew that his old friend had a bad feeling about this situation, too. The search party rode over to the side of the canyon. Nothing was visible except a pile of loose, broken rocks, some of them pretty big. The way Dog continued to paw at the stones told Preacher most of what he needed to know.
Move those rocks.
But...
Standing Rock fell silent when Two Bears gave him a hard look. Standing Rock dismounted and went to the rocks. He started lifting them and tossing them aside. Several other warriors got down from their ponies and moved to help him. Standing Rock suddenly stepped back sharply as if he had just uncovered a rattlesnake. Preacher leaned forward in the saddle to peer into the jumble of stone. He had a pretty good idea that it wasn't a snake that Standing Rock had come across. It was a foot, visible from the ankle down. The foot had a moccasin on it. The rest of the leg to which it was attached was hidden under the rocks. The other warriors had recoiled from the grim discovery as well.
Continue moving those rocks.
They did so with obvious reluctance. Everybody knew what they were gonna find, and it didn't take long to uncover the rest of the body. It belonged to a young Assiniboine warrior. The rock slide that had covered him up had done quite a bit of damage to his features, but he was still recognizable.
It is Blue Bull.
He must have been standing here when those rocks fell on him and killed him.
Why did he not get out of the way?
There must not have been time. My friend.
Something ain't right here. You mind if I take a closer look?
Go ahead.
Preacher dismounted and approached the dead man. Standing Rock turned to face him. The warrior's stubborn expression made it clear that he did not want Preacher disturbing his friend's body.
Standing Rock, step aside.
I won't do anything to dishonor Blue Bull. Just that I don't think this is what it seems to be. Look at how he's laying on his back with his head toward the wall and his feet toward the middle of the canyon.
That means nothing.
Well, I think it does. Let's say he came over here and was standing facing the wall for some reason. When those rocks came down on top of him, likely they would have knocked him face down. If he heard the rocks start to fall and turned to try to run, not only would he be face down, his head would be pointed toward the middle of the canyon.
You cannot be sure about these things.
Maybe not, but I think there's a pretty good chance I'm right. What it really looks like is that somebody dragged Blue Bull's body over here, then climbed up the canyon wall to start the rock slide that covered up his body.
He would have had to be unconscious or dead for that to happen.
Yeah, more than likely. Maybe we can tell if you let me take a good look at the body.
He was my friend. Stand back. I will do it.
Yeah, sure.
Preacher moved one step back. Standing Rock knelt beside his dead friend and looked him over from head to toe.
There are no injuries except the ones the rocks made when they fell on him.
Yeah, turn him over.
Standing Rock sent a hostile glance at the mountain man, but he did as Preacher said and gently took hold of Blue Bull's shoulders. Carefully, he rolled the body onto its left side. A blood stain had spread on the back of Blue Bull's shirt, just to the left of the middle of his back. In the middle of that blood stain was a small tear in the buckskin.
A knife did that. Somebody stabbed him in the back, probably out in the middle of the canyon, and then they tried to hide the body.
That would mean...
Yeah, this was no accident. Blue Bull was murdered.
Standing Rock and several of his friends carefully wrapped Blue Bull's body in a blanket and tied it onto one of the horses. It was a solemn group that left the canyon and started back toward the Assiniboine village. Two Bears and Preacher rode at the head of the search party.
Do you have any idea who might have done this terrible thing, Preacher?
I thought I spotted some sign from a horse wearing shoes in the canyon. Ground's too rocky to be sure anything, though, but I'd say there's a good chance Blue Bull ran into a white man. Probably more than one.
Why more than one?
Well, it ain't that easy for most folks to get behind somebody and stab them, unless the fella on the receiving end of that knife is distracted somehow. If Blue Bull came upon two white men in that canyon, would he have stopped and talked to them?
two bears looked over at Standing Rock, who was riding on his other side, close enough to have heard Preacher's question.
He would have talked to them. He would have asked them who they were and what they were doing on Assiniboine land.
Well, would he have challenged them enough that they thought he might attack them?
Blue Bull would never attack anyone without good reason.
Blue Bull's blood ran hot at times, like that of all young men. The white men might have believed they were in danger, but that was no reason to murder one of my young men.
No, it sure wouldn't. I think we're on the right track about what happened, though, regardless of the reason for it.
Do you think you could track the men who did this, old friend?
I could give it a try. There ain't all that much daylight left, but I can go up on that ridge and take a look around. And there really were some other riders in that canyon. They didn't come out either side of it. Now, we would have seen the tracks at this end, and Standing Rock probably would have noticed them at the other end when he went all the way through looking for Blue Bull.
You saw no such tracks?
I saw no tracks of any kind, shod or unshod.
Well, there you go.
Preacher pulled back gently on horse's reins.
I'll take dog and have a look.
I'm coming with you.
Sure, I'd be glad to have the company. Come on.
We will take Blue Bull back to the village. Be careful.
The two men turned their mounts. Preacher and Standing Rock rode back toward the canyon, which was only a couple of hundred yards away. As they approached, Preacher studied the ridge on both sides of the canyon mouth.
I don't think we're going to get up there anywhere close, at least not on horseback. We can leave our mounts down here, though. Check it out on foot.
Perhaps my pony is more sure-footed than that beast of yours.
Well, maybe so. You want to take a chance on rolling down that ridge with a horse on top of you? I reckon that's up to you.
Standing Rock glared, but didn't say anything else. When they reached the base of the ridge, he dismounted just like Preacher did. They took their rifles from saddle sheaths as they got ready to climb. The ridge was rugged enough, rocks jutting out from it and hardy bushes growing here and there to provide handholds. They had no trouble climbing the 40 or 50 feet to the top. Dog found the going even easier and reached the crest first. When Preacher made it to the top, he saw that the ridge was about a half a mile wide. On the far side, it dropped down into a narrow valley, and on the other side of that valley rose an even more rugged hill.
We'll follow the canyon. If there were riders down in yonder, they had to go down and come back out somewhere.
There were riders in the canyon. We know that because they killed Blue Bull.
Somebody sure did. Come on.
They walked along the side of the canyon, staying fairly close to the rim. Preacher saw several places where he thought men on horseback could get up and down the caved-in sides, but there were no hoof prints to indicate that any had done so recently. He didn't spot any footprints either. Then, when they weren't far away from the place where they had found Blue Bull's body, Preacher stopped and pointed to the ground.
Take a gander at those.
The ground was pretty rocky up here, too, but there were stretches of dirt and scrubby grass. In one of those stretches, several prints made by a shod horse were visible. Preacher knelt to study the tracks closer, and so did Standing Rock.
They are only a few hours old.
Yeah, and they lead away from the canyon.
There were two shod horses.
Yeah.
They have to be the men who killed Blue Bull.
We don't know that for sure, but I'd say the chances are mighty good that they are.
We must follow them.
What if they're on their way back to a bigger bunch?
I do not care. They killed Blue Bull. His death must be avenged.
Well, it happens, I agree with you. But we're liable to lose a lot before we can catch up with them. And we don't know what they're up to, but more than likely it ain't anything good. If they catch sight of us, they're liable to start shooting.
The Blackfeet call you Ghost Killer, do they not? They say you can turn yourself into a phantom and cut a man's throat without anyone knowing you were ever there.
Well, now that was all some while back. But if we're careful, maybe we can get a look at him without being spotted.
We must find more tracks.
Don't bother. Dog can show us where to go. Go!
Preacher made sure the big cur had the scent of the horses that had passed this way.
Go on, dog. Hunt!
Dog took off. Preacher and Standing Rock hurried after him. Dog led him down into a thickly wooded valley on the far side of the ridge. Preacher spotted more hoof prints from time to time, but he relied more on the big cur's nose. As soon as the sun dropped behind the mountains to the west, the light began to fade quickly. The two men could still see Dog ahead of them, though, so they kept going, trotting easily through the gray shadows of dusk. Dog turned and trotted back to him.
Why did you stop him?
Keep your voice down. I don't want to go announcing to those varmints that were here. Thought I just caught a whiff of smoke. Yeah, that's smoke, all right. It's not a campfire, though. It's tobacco. Somebody's rolled and smoked a quarrelly not too far from here.
Horses.
Uh-huh.
Quite a few riders were on the move. It sounded like 20 or 30 of them at least a couple of hundred yards away. Preacher stood there stiffly as he tried to track them by sound. As best he could determine, the riders were headed east. The Assiniboine village lay in that direction.
Come on, we gotta get back to the horses.
But those men, who are they? Where are they going?
That's what we're gonna find out.
Preacher and Standing Rock ran back over the ridge. Even so, the sound of the horses had faded away completely by the time the two men climbed down and reached their mounts.
They are gone!
Yeah, but we got a pretty good idea where they're going.
And if we are wrong?
Then they ain't heading for the village and there ain't nothing to worry about.
But we will lose them. Blue Bull's death will go unavenged.
Not necessarily. Now, we can pick up on their trail later. With that big of a bunch, it ain't gonna be too hard.
Yeah!
Yeah!
You think they are going to attack my people?
That's my hunch, yeah!
They killed Blue Bull, and now they want to hurt the rest of the Assiniboine.
It didn't make any sense. This was pretty good grazing land hereabouts, and cattlemen always wanted to expand. But as far as Preacher knew, nobody'd been encroaching on the Assiniboine hunting grounds. The state of truce that existed between Two Bears' people and the neighboring spreads had been going on for a long time. Nobody wanted an Indian war, but it seemed that Standing Rock was right. For whatever purpose, those riders planned to attack the village. They had a pretty good lead. Still, Preacher and Standing Rock might have a chance to reach the village before any trouble broke out. If they could warn Two Bears to get ready for a fight, that might make a lot of difference in the outcome. But even if the Assiniboine were taken by surprise, Preacher threw a hand in the air.
Hold on!
Preacher hauled back on horse's reins and brought the stallion to a halt. Standing Rock stopped too, but clearly he did not like it.
What are you doing? We must hurry.
Listen.
As soon as they heard the shooting, Preacher and Standing Rock got their mounts moving again. Preacher trusted horse to find the easiest and fastest route. He kept the stallion's nose pointed in the right direction, but otherwise he gave him his head. The ground flew past. They left Dog far behind him, unable to match the speed of the horses except in short bursts. The preacher knew the big cur would follow him and catch up as soon as he could. The glow of fires came into view, marking the location of the Assiniboine village. Preacher aimed straight for it. As Preacher reached the edge of the village, he saw a man on horseback gun down one of the Assiniboine warriors, who doubled over as the slug punched into his gut. Killer swung his horse to the side and started to draw bead on a woman who was running away.
Hey, partner!
The man jerked his head around just in time to catch a bullet from Preacher in his forehead. The man flew out of his saddle like he'd been hit with a giant sledgehammer. By the time that man had hit the ground, Preacher had found another target. He triggered again. And this time, one of the raiders slewed around in the saddle, dropped his gun, and clutched his bullet-shattered shoulder. He managed to stay mounted, but his horse ran off wildly. Standing Rock, Winchester in his hands, rode up beside Preacher. Another raider dropped his gun as the bullet creased him. Suddenly, Preacher spotted one of the strangers galloping toward him. Preacher was about to cut loose his wolf again when he realized that the man had a prisoner. One of the Assiniboine women struggled to get free as the man held her in front of him like a human shield. Preacher held off on the Colt's trigger at the last second. He sent the stallion surging forward, but the raider jerked his horse to the side and disappeared between a couple of lodges. Preacher headed in the same direction.
Clear the way! If I don't get out of here, the Colonel and his friends in the ring will have our hides!
Preacher spotted the fleeing rider ahead of him, but several of the other men closed ranks and tried to block his path. Preacher put the reins between his teeth, guided horse with his knees, and drew his other Colt. Both revolvers belched flames as he charged toward the raiders. Preacher couldn't tell how many of them he hit, but they sure as Hades got out of the way. Preacher reached the edge of the village and saw his quarry again. Preacher aimed high because he didn't want to take a chance on hitting the prisoner. The man didn't slow down, but he did look back. It was hard to tell in the uncertain light from the fires, but Preacher would have sworn that the varmint grinned at him. Filled with fury, Preacher started after him. Horse had only taken a few strides, though, when another of the raiders suddenly angled in at him from the side. The rider was too close too quick, and Preacher couldn't avoid him. The stallion crashed into the other horse. Preacher barely had time to kick his feet free of the stirrups, so that when horse fell, he was flung from the saddle. He hit the ground with stunning force that knocked the breath out of him. Momentum made Preacher roll over a couple of times before he came up on a knee. He had held on to both guns. Preacher pointed him after the fleeing raider who had taken the woman prisoner, but with a grimace, he stopped himself from firing. They were out of handgun range, and even if they hadn't been, it would have been too risky. Anyway, he had more pressing problems. Preacher twisted and saw that the man who had run into him had managed to get up and had taken that shot at him. Both of Preacher's revolvers snapped up. Preacher got to his feet, braced himself, and looked around for Horse. He was worried about the stallion. He shouldn't have been. Horse was standing up again and seemed fine. The other horse was still on the ground, though flailing its legs. The unlucky animal had a visibly broken leg. Preacher ended its torment.
Preacher!
Preacher turned to see two bears running toward him, carrying a rifle. The chief had a streak of blood on his face, but he seemed to be all right otherwise. Standing Rock hurried along beside him. The shooting may have stopped, but chaos and confusion still gripped the village. A couple of the lodges were on fire. As that garish light spread, Preacher saw that the raiders had all fled. The ones who could, that is. Half a dozen or so were still there, lying bloody and motionless on the ground.
Preacher, are you all right?
I'm just shook up a mite, nothing to worry about. What's going on here?
The men rode in shooting. We had no warning except when we heard their horses, and by then they were almost upon us.
This must have something to do with the killing of Blue Bull.
Yeah, maybe so, but that don't tell us why they rode in here and started raising hell. Maybe they're slavers. I saw one of the varmints carrying off a woman. Anybody else missing?
We will find out.
The three men started toward the lodges. A number of Assiniboine men and women lay lifelessly on the ground, too. One of the women hurried to meet them. Preacher recognized her as one of Two Bears' other wives.
Two Bears, Wildflower and Little Hawk are gone.
Gone? How? They must be here somewhere.
No, we have looked everywhere. They are not in the village.
Perhaps they are among the dead.
No, we looked. They are not here.
Now hold on a minute. The woman I saw who was being kidnapped by one of those varmints? She could have been Wildflower. I never got that good a look at her, but her hair was long. She wore it loose.
My son. Did she have my son with her?
Well, now that I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry. Light was bad, everything was moving too fast. I reckon she could have been hanging on to a baby, but I can't say for sure.
If the woman you saw was Wildflower, she would have my grandson with her. She would not have abandoned him in the midst of all this trouble.
I must go to my lodge.
Standing Rock ran off into the confusion. Preacher and Two Bears followed at a slower pace. When they reached the lodge, they found Standing Rock on his knees outside the entrance, looking stricken.
They are gone. My wife and son, gone.
We will find them. We will bring them home safely. The woman you saw, she was unharmed?
Right then, she seemed to be, as far as I could tell. There's no telling what happened after that fella rode off with her and the baby.
Who would have done this thing? Why?
Preacher couldn't answer the second question, but his mind went back to what he had heard the kidnapper shouting as he had tried to get away.
Oh, hell, not them again.
Preacher sat in Two Bears' lodge with the chief and Standing Rock.
The varmints call themselves the Indian Ring. A few years back, when old Ulysses Grant was still running things in Washington, there was another bunch known as the Indian Ring, but they was mostly just cheap crooks and politicians, which is just two ways of saying the same thing as far as I'm concerned. Now, the businessmen who were part of it paid bribes to government officials for the right to do business on Indian reservations. Sometimes they'd pay off politicians to set aside certain treaties if they thought they could make some money out of it.
What would such men want with my daughter and grandson?
Well, this ain't the same bunch. That first one got broke up after a while, mostly through political pressure. Oh, I reckon some of the no-good skunks who were part of it probably belonged to this new Indian Ring as well, but they've changed their tune. It ain't just about graft and corruption anymore. Now they're out to steal everything that ain't nailed down, especially when it belongs to folks like you, Two Bears. They want all the land that's been reserved for the tribes, and they'll wipe out anybody who stands in their way.
This is not a reservation.
Well, maybe not officially, but it's government land, open range. Settlers around here haven't pushed to claim it and drive you and your people off, but maybe somebody else got that idea. And if the Indian Ring is behind it, well, they wouldn't shy away from hiring gun wolves to grab Wildflower and Little Hawk so they can force you to do what they want.
How do you know so much about this Indian Ring?
Now, me and Smoke and Matt have come up against them a couple of times in the past. We managed to bust up their schemes, but it took a heap of shooting both times.
Smoke Jensen? I have heard you speak of him.
Yeah, and Matt's a Jensen now, too. Real ring-tailed Ranahan, just like Smoke. I reckon they're as close to family as this old codger's got.
Why do you believe this Indian Ring has something to do with the attack kidnapping today?
Well, I can't say for sure. But I heard the fellow who grabbed him mentioned some colonel and a ring while he was giving orders. Killing Blue Bull like they done and then swooping down on the village in the night, murdering folks left and right. Trust me, Two Bears, that's exactly the sort of thing this new Indian Ring would do.
Talk, talk, talk. We sit and talk while those men are getting farther away with Wildflower and Little Hawk. We should be pursuing them.
There ain't enough light to track them tonight. With a bunch that big, it won't be hard to pick up their trail in the morning. Now we'll go after them at first light.
They could be miles away by then.
And they likely will be, but that won't keep us from catching up to them.
And what will happen to my wife and child in the meantime?
I've been thinking about that. When the varmints first rode in here, they start shooting folks right away.
They were firing over the heads of my people. The killing did not start until they had been here for a few minutes.
Yeah, they were shooting to keep everybody scared and confused while their boss went after Wildflower and Little Hawk. He didn't want to take a chance on either of them getting hit by a stray bullet. When he got his hands on them, though, and was carrying them off, then it was different. Then they could slaughter whoever they wanted to.
I will find these men and kill them.
Too bad all the fellows they left behind were dead. If any of them still been alive, we might have been able to make them tell us where the rest of the bunch is headed.
Yes, we would have made them talk.
I don't think you should come along with us, Two Bears. Now, I'll take Standing Rock and some of your other young warriors, but you should stay here.
You think I cannot keep up with the younger men? Do not forget, you are older than I am, Preacher.
Now, I know that and know that, but your people have suffered a terrible blow tonight. They'll need their chief here to help them get through this time of tragedy. Besides, there's something else I need you to do.
What is this thing you wish?
I'm going to write a telegram. I need you to go to the nearest settlement with the Western Union office and send it for me. Message is going to Smoke down in Colorado, and he can pass it on to Matt. He usually knows how to get a hold of the boy. When they hear that the Indian Ring might be up to no good again, they're going to come a-running.
Any of my warriors can do that.
I ain't so sure about that. This is mighty important. I'd rather the chore be handled by the fellow I trust the most in these parts.
I still think you believe I'm too old to go with you. But I will do as you say. It is true my people will need me here. There is much to mourn.
Still you talk. All this talk of telegrams and white men named Jensen. All of this will take time. Time we do not have. We must pursue these evil men. Now!
Well, we're gonna do that. First thing in the morning, like I said. But you can bet your war bonnet on this, Standing Rock. If the Indian Ring and their hired killers are mixed up in this the way I think they are, then we're liable to need all the help we can get. And there ain't nobody I'd rather have side me in a fight than Smoke and Matt Jensen.
There wasn't much worse than getting woken up out of a sound sleep and having to jump out of bed. Well, that wasn't strictly true, actually. Lots of things were worse than that. Among them was being jolted awake and having to leave your nice warm bed when your nice warm wife was snuggled up against you. But Smoke Jensen had more important things to worry about right now. As he buckled on his gun belt, Smoke called through the closed door of his and Sally's bedroom to the foreman of the Sugarloaf Ranch.
Did we lose anybody out there, Pearly?
Not permanent, like. That young fella, Steve Barstow, you hired a while back, got a bullet hole in his arm, but the bone ain't busted, and I reckon he'll be all right.
I'm glad to hear it.
Smoke turned back toward the bed. He would have pulled his clothes on hurriedly in the dark after Pearly knocked on the door to wake him, but Sally, who'd been awakened as well, sat up and lit the lamp on the little bedside table. Its yellow glow lit up her face. Her drowsy expression and the way her dark hair was tousled from sleep made her prettier than ever. Smoke kissed the top of her head.
You wait just 1 minute, mister.
Sally reached up, rested her hand on the back of his neck, and gently pulled him back down for a proper kiss.
You make it mighty hard to go off chasing rustlers in the middle of the night.
Just giving you a reminder of what's waiting for you at home, so maybe you won't take any foolish chances. Though that never seemed to do all that much good in the past, did it?
Who knows? Without those little reminders, I might have done some things that were even more loco.
I'm not sure that would be possible. You go ahead, Smoke, and let me know if I need to help with that wounded man. In the meantime, it's liable to be after sunup before you get back. I'll have plenty of hot food and coffee waiting for you and the boys.
Smoke nodded his thanks, went over to the door, and slipped out into the hall where Pearly was waiting. The foreman held a lantern he had carried in from the barn when he came to wake Smoke. The two men left the house and headed for the big barn.
I told Cal to saddle your horse for you. He knows to be careful not to let the critter take a nip out of his hide.
Who brought the word about the rustlers hitting us again?
Ollie Sims. He brought Barstow in to get that bullet hole patched up, too. Slewfoot, Dave Taggart, Billy Doyle, and Chet Burns are still out there guarding the rest of the herd in case the varmints come back.
Since they've already made one raid tonight, I doubt they'll come back for more. They're bound to know that we'd be ready for them if they did.
After raiding the herd twice in the past month, you'd think they'd figure we were ready for them anyway. And we were. We had 6 men out there watching the critters, and still they got in, ventilated Barstow, and took off with nigh on to 100 cows. Smoke, I ain't trying to tell you your business, but we just got to put a stop to this.
We will. We're going to track them down and end it.
The this was indeed the third time rustlers had hit the Sugarloaf herd in recent weeks. The first night, about 50 cattle had disappeared with no warning. No one had been riding night herd. The second time the rustlers struck, shots had been fired, but no one was wounded. The thieves had made off with about a dozen more cattle than they had stolen the first time. Now, around 100 head of stock had been driven off, and a man who rode for Smoke's brand had a bullet in him. Neither of those things said well with Smoke. Although relatively young in years, only in his mid-30s, Smoke Jensen had packed several lifetimes worth of living into those years. He'd been shot, knifed, beaten, and he had given back even more punishment than he had suffered. Slugs from his gun had sent more bad men than he could count straight to hell. So he could be forgiven for it if he had wanted to leave that wild, dangerous existence behind him and enjoy the life of a prosperous rancher with a beautiful wife and a circle of staunch friends. Problem was, he'd spent so many years as a fiddle-footed drifter with his old friend Preacher that he often got the urge to sit a saddle and go see what was on the far side of the nearest hill he could find. He'd realized that deep down, action and adventure were like water and air to him. He couldn't live without them. A dozen men led horses from the barn before Smoke and Pearly got there. Smoke saw young Calvin Woods leading not only his own mount, but also the big Appaloosa that Smoke normally rode. The Palouse tossed his head, clearly anxious to get out and stretch his legs on the trail. The punchers were all wearing guns and had grim expressions on their faces.
Where's Steve Barstow?
I'm right here, Mr. Jensen.
A couple of men moved aside, and a young, freckle-faced, red-headed cowboy stepped forward. He had a blood-stained rag tied tightly around his upper left arm to serve as a bandage.
I'm ready to ride with you and the rest of the fellas.
You don't have to do that, Steve.
Oh, yes, sir. No offense, but I reckon I do. One of those no-good night riders put a hole in me, and I aim to do something about it. He made a bad mistake when he didn't kill me, or at least ventilate my gun arm.
I don't blame you a bit for feeling that way, but you better be sure that you're up to some hard, fast riding.
Oh, I'm up for it. If I ain't, I'll turn around and come back by myself. You won't have to waste a man by sending him with me.
Fair enough. Since you and Ollie were up there tonight where the rustlers hit us, the two of you can lead the way.
We sure will, Mr. Jensen.
Let's mount up, then.
The men swung into their saddles. They all carried handguns and rifle butts stuck up from the saddle sheaths strapped to every horse. They were armed for bear. They left the ranch and headed northwest toward the mountains that loomed over the Sugarloaf. At this time of year, Smoke kept his herd in the high pastures that were thick with grass. Vast, park-like area surrounded by stands of pine, juniper, and aspen. It was beautiful country, and never more so when the deep green of those pastures was dotted with darker shapes of grazing cattle. After the rustlers had struck the first time, Smoke had sent a couple of hands up the slopes to stay at an old stone-lined shack that used to be a trapper's cabin. The two men keeping an eye on the herd hadn't been enough to keep the rustlers from coming back, but this time shots were fired. The two punchers were forced to retreat to the line shack and hole up there until the rustlers were gone. Smoke hadn't taken this second outrage lying down. He'd taken Pearly and several other men and set out to trail the thieves. Unfortunately, a fierce thunderstorm had broken and washed out all the tracks before they could go very far. Unable to find out where the rustlers had gone, Smoke had asked for 6 volunteers and had gotten twice that many men ready to move up to the high pastures. They worked in shifts, 2 men sleeping in the line shack while the other 4 were out riding herd on the stock. That way, they were able to keep someone with the cattle around the clock. Well, that hadn't worked either. The rustlers had bushwhacked the night herders, wounding Steve Barstow and keeping the other men pinned down while the cattle were driven off.
There had to be at least a dozen of them, Mr. Jensen. Probably more than that, considering how many were shooting at us and how many it must have taken to drive off those cows.
The gang's getting bigger every time, and they're getting more daring with each raid, too. If this keeps up, there'll be an army stealing our whole blasted herd.
But it won't keep up, because we're going to track down those varmints and give them their needings.
That's right, Steve. We should have done it before now, I reckon. I'm getting too plumb peaceful.
Smoke, Jensen? Peaceful? That'll be the day. I'll believe it when I see it.
When they reached the high pastures, Smoke saw a movement amidst the trees.
Who's there? Better hold it right where you are.
Take it easy, Dave. We brought Mr. Jensen and some of the men from the ranch.
Steve, is that you?
A rider emerged from the shadows under the pines, holding a rifle.
Last time I saw you, you were bleeding like a stuck pig.
Oh, I'm fine. I got enough blood left to go chase down those rustlers.
Do you see which way they went, Dave?
They headed north along Gunside Ridge. Slewfoot's trailing the bastards.
By himself?
We wanted to go with him, but he told us to stay here and keep an eye on the herd. Since he's been working for you longer than me or Billy or Chet have been, we figured we'd better do what he said. We're coming with you now, though, aren't we, Mr. Jensen?
No, the three of you stay here. I don't want to leave the herd untended. We'll go after Slewfoot and maybe catch up to him before he gets himself into a fix. Come on!
Smoke urged the Palouse into a run. The shots came from the north, the direction Slewfoot had gone. The dark, looming bulk of Gunside Ridge to the west made it impossible to get lost even at night. Smoke kept his mount moving pretty fast, and the other riders trailed closely behind him. Finally, when it seemed like they were getting close, Smoke signaled for the men to stop. He dismounted and pulled his Winchester from its saddle sheath.
Hurley, pick four men to come with you and me. Cal, you'll be staying here with the other men.
Blasted Smoke, I'd rather come with you.
I know you would, but I want you here to take charge if we need you to come in and save our bacon.
All right, but be careful.
Starting to sound like Sally.
I just know how accident-prone this old pelican is.
It won't be no accident when you find yourself with my boot up your...
Let's go.
Pearly quickly pointed out four men to come with him and Smoke. They started off on foot, moving quickly and blending into the shadows. Smoke followed the shots, veering to the left so that he could approach under the cover of some trees. Reached the edge of the pines and stopped just behind one of the trunks. Peered out across an open stretch of ground toward more trees at the base of Gunside Ridge. It took only a moment for the setup to become clear in Smoke's mind. A single set of muzzle flashes from a clump of trees to the right marked Slewfoot's location. The two riflemen, undoubtedly a pair of rustlers, were in the pines at the base of the ridge. Pearly eased up beside Smoke and took in the situation just as quickly as Smoke had.
If all six of us open up on those trees by the ridge, we'll skin those polecats quick as you please.
Yeah, but I wouldn't mind taking at least one of them alive so we can ask him some questions. If you and I were to work our way around that way and get behind them, then the rest could open up and come just close enough to stampede them right into our arms.
I like that idea. Ain't no guarantee those Jaspers will cooperate in being took alive, though.
All we can do is try.
Smoke gathered the other four men around him in the shadows and explained the plan to him. They grasped it without any trouble, and Smoke knew he could count on them to do their part.
We'll signal you with the hoot of an owl when we're ready to open up the ball. Let's go.
The cat footed through the darkness, using the cover of trees as much as they could. When the trees ran out, Smoke dropped to his hands and knees and motioned for Pearly to do likewise. Flattening onto his belly, Smoke began crawling toward the ridge. The grass was tall enough to conceal the two of them, and they moved slowly, carefully enough that the slightest disturbance of the grass would be difficult to spot in moonlight. At last, Smoke and Pearly reached the trees where the bushwhackers were hidden. When they were back safely in the shadows, they stood up. Smoke led the way to the very base of the ridge. They followed it toward the spot where the riflemen were holed up. The strip of trees was about 20 feet wide, so Smoke and Pearly would have room to get behind the bushwhackers. When they were practically in the laps of the men from Sugarloaf, Smoke stopped again. He stiffened as his gaze turned toward the ridge. The rock face was dark, but he saw an even deeper patch of darkness that had a faintly ominous look to it, as if it were the gaping maw of some hungry primordial creature. It looked for all the world like the mouth of a tunnel. Smoke would have sworn there was no tunnel in Gunside Ridge. He tapped Pearly on the shoulder to let the foreman know they were ready. A heartbeat later, the rest of Smoke's men opened fire. Some of their shots ripped into the ground just in front of the trees, while others smacked into the trunks and whizzed through the branches overhead. They weren't missing by much, coming close enough with their slugs to make the two bushwhackers give up the standoff and beat a retreat.
Here they come. Split up. Wait until they're close.
Smoke leaned his Winchester against the tree and drew his Colt. Pearly stepped over to one of the other trees and pressed his back against it so he couldn't be seen. The bushwhacker who was in the lead raced past Smoke. With blinding speed, Smoke leaped out from behind the tree. He butted his pistol against the rustler's head. Pearly tackled the second man. At the same time, Smoke stepped forward and kicked away the rifle his man had dropped. Smoke pressed the barrel of his revolver against the back of the man's head and reached down with his other hand to draw the weapon from the bushwhacker's holster.
You're caught, mister. Try anything, and I'll blow your brains out.
Smoke glanced toward his friends. He couldn't make out any details in the shadows, but he saw the struggling shapes churning around. Fortunately, the weapon was pointed upward as Pearly and the other bushwhacker wrestled over. Suddenly, one of the figures slumped to the ground. Smoke dropped to a knee beside the man he had captured, ready to lift his gun and fire if the other bushwhacker had been victorious.
Smoke?
I'm here. I got mine.
Yeah, same here.
Smoke took hold of his prisoner's collar.
Don't try anything. My trigger finger is mighty itchy right now. Those are my cattle you stole tonight, and one of my men you shot.
You're Smoke Jensen?
That's right.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Save it! Anyway, where you're going, the fellow with the horns and the forked tail is in charge.